I rode with old Jeb Stuart and his band of Southern horse. There never were no Yankees who could beat us force to force. No, they never did defeat us, but we never could evade their dirty foreign politics and cowardly blockade. Well, we hadn't any powder and we hadn't any shot. We hadn't any money to buy what we ain't got. So we rode our worn-out horses and we ate on plain cornmeal. And we licked them where we caught them with Southern guts and steel. Well, we sunk the ship at Sumter and we broke her plumb in two. And we showed them bully Yankees just what we aimed to do. At a little creek called Bull Run, we took their starry rag to wipe our horses down with, and I ain't here to brag.
Welcome back, everyone, to Rebel Madman Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network on the 28th day of October in the year of 2023. And just a little something to incite the masses here, if I might. Oh, man, does it ever get any better than Levon Helm there, Stephen?
No, that's good. The night that drove old Dixie Downs really good, too.
No, that is an excellent one. But, you know, when we look at how the war of Northern aggression, or our second war for independence, it certainly wasn't a civil war. You know, very early on, Lincoln's commander-in-chief of the military, Henry Halleck, wrote a General Order Number 12 in which he declared that assault on civilians were coming into general disuse among the most civilized nations. Well, folks, you can't be a civilized nation and kill innocent people. I don't know where you get the definition of civilized, but it is not true. But yet the first strategy created by General Winfield Scott at Lincoln's request and utilized from the commencement of the war was to target civilians. The war was against the civilian population of the South, and that is what they intended to do. Because, folks, you can say all you want to, but the Anaconda Plan was created to starve the South into submission, depriving the people, not just the people of the military, but the civilian people of food and medicine, the very essentials of life itself. Thus, the nature of the war that was to be waged against the people of the South was in place from day one. All that happened afterward was simply the extension and exacerbation of the already chosen path of total war against every man, woman, and child of the Confederacy. So, go ahead, Stephen.
But, Mike, that collective punishment against civilians, that's just something those Nazis did, isn't it? I mean, I am just appalled at the myth that we've been fed our whole life and the how starkly it contrasts to what the actual truth is.
Well, now, doggone it, Stephen. I thought it was Stalin and Mao. I thought they were the great killers.
Yeah.
So now you're telling me that some silly guy with a funny mustache in Germany is worse?
That's what they would have us believe.
No.
That's what Coach told me. Come on, that's what Coach told me, Mike.
Oh, well.
You know, and he wouldn't lie.
No.
He wouldn't lie. Of course, he didn't know anything. I mean, they didn't. These wonderful history teachers didn't even have to have a degree in history. You know, what better way to hide your history from the American public than to put people in the classroom whose degrees are in physical education?
Yeah, we've been living under occupational government ever since, and it's amazing to me how Reconstruction was re-education, that they were Marxists. That it all makes sense now when I go back to that and look at it that way. You know, with 1848 in Europe, and then it came over here, and then they didn't succeed there, so they tried it here, and man, they succeeded here in spades. they're taking on the whole world.
Well, you know, the thing that gets to me so many times is people will quote, well, you know, Lincoln had this Lieber Code. He can't help it if his generals didn't follow the Lieber Code. It wasn't his fault. But folks, let me read something for you. In the Lieber Code, Article 21, here is the direct quote. The citizen of a hostile country is thus the enemy, and as such is subjected to the hardships of war. And he continues in Article 29, stating, the more vigorously wars are pursued, the better it is for humanity. One has to wonder how Lieber defined better in humanity, don't they, Stephen?
I definitely agree. Yes, sir.
Finally, old Lieber said, and I quote, the ultimate object of all modern war is a renewed state of peace. Well, Stephen, is there anything more peaceful than the grave?
That's about it. That's about the only peace that war is going to bring, the peace of the grave.
Well, in the wonderful Lieber Code, necessity always trumped both legality and humanity. Sherman and Sheridan would never have undertaken their atrocities had they followed any of the codes of war that had been taught to them at West Point. Indeed, on August the 4th, 1863, Sherman wrote to Grant at Vicksburg, now, folks, this is on official government records. Listen to this, and I quote. Now, remember, it's August of 1863, and this is after Vicksburg. This is before the March to the Sea. And here's what Sherman said to Lincoln. The amount of burning, stealing, and plundering done by our army makes me ashamed of it. I would rather quit the service if I could, because I fear that we are drifting to the worst sort of vandalism. You and I and every commander must go through the war justly charged with the crimes at which we blush, unquote. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Vicksburg, too, was a bad thing. Wasn't that where that guy they called Spoon's Butler was in charge?
He was in New Orleans.
Okay. I did visit some of the historical sites in Vicksburg once when I was a kid, and there was this house there that was up during the battle, and I don't know if it's still there, but they said that it was so full of shot that the walls had taken so much. It was quite a sight. I've toured a few of those battlefields when I was a kid back in Mississippi, but, you know, I haven't been lately. But that's horrifying to think that happened here, and it's going to happen again. These people have no conscience either. I mean, we don't matter to them. They call it collateral damage. You know, I feel kind of like an enemy combatant, Mike. I mean, that's probably what they're going to call us. Yeah.
We are. Well, you know, one of the things, even though he said that in a direct letter to Lincoln, shortly thereafter, when he was confronted by a Southerner who said, everything you are doing, General, is barbarian in its very nature. Sherman said to him, and this is also in the National Archives, our army may take your house, your fields, your everything, and turn you out helpless to starve. It may be wrong, but that don't alter the case, unquote.
Might makes right. These people... Sherman is no better than the ones that were in the Paris Commune, if you ask me. The people they put in charge there when they were in the Paris Commune, that's what's going to happen here, I'm afraid. But I can't imagine what that was like. You know, it was such a different time. But I try to put myself back in their situation, and it's hard to imagine, you know, the way they lived. But it seems like things, they seem to be the same, just as barbaric today. Only difference is that the weapons are more powerful, but the evil, I think, maybe is just the same.
And
the way that it started was the few and dominion over the many. All the way back. That's the central mm-hmm. theme to this whole thing, I believe. The few want control and dominion over the many. And they don't Absolutely. Care how they have to treat the many in order to get it.
Well, just stop and think about it, Stephen. And this is the very concept of the Constitution of 1787. Now, if I am a despot, if I am a critical politician who just wants to use the people for whatever I can get from them, if I am in the state of Georgia, or you're in the state of South Carolina, and we look around and we say, how many people do we got here that we can steal from? How many of these people can we take everything they earn? How many of them can we take their land? And then you go, oh, hell, I could be a lot richer if I could do this in all of the states, not just one.
Yeah.
And people do not want to face that, Stephen, but that's exactly the bottom line, the common denominator of why the Federalists wanted to switch from the Articles of Confederation to the new Constitution.
And it's produced exactly the results they said it would, too. We're ruled by the same people they said we would be ruled by, and the foreign intervention has just turned us with a standing army here to enforce the tyranny of the government.
Well, let's look at a couple of people that we probably should give credit to in the Union Army. Have you ever heard of Robert Gould Shaw?
No, sir.
Okay, he was the commander of that famous black regiment in that film that some people have seen called Glory.
Yes.
About the all-black unit. And he was commanded by a superior officer to burn Darien, Georgia. Now, Shaw wrote to his wife after being ordered to burn the town, and here's what he said. Again, folks, official documents. For myself, I have gone through the war so far without any dishonor, and I do not like to degenerate into a plunderer and a robber. And the same applies to every officer in my regiment, unquote. Well, the Union general hero at Gettysburg, Joshua Chamberlain, wrote to his sister on December the 14th, 1864, after having burned the homes of women and children near Petersburg, Virginia, upon the orders of Ulysses S. Grant. The letter to his sister, he stated, I am willing to fight men in arms. I am not willing to fight babes in arms. So, quite a comment. And Union General Don Carlos Buell actually resigned in protest. Now, we certainly weren't taught this, but here's what he said when he resigned in protest. Quote, I believe that the policy and means with which the war was being prosecuted were discreditable to our nation and a stain on our civilization, unquote. Even the northern newspapers, Stephen, commented upon these war crimes. One New York paper, referring to Sherman's capture and deportation of 400 young women with their children from Roswell, Georgia, stated, and I quote, it is hardly conceivable that an officer bearing a United States commission of major general should have so far forgotten the commonest dictates of decency and humanity as to drive 400 penniless girls hundreds of miles away from their homes and friends to seek their livelihood amid strange and hostile people. We repeat our earnest hope that further information may redeem the name of General Sherman and our own from this frightful disgrace. Problem is, folks, didn't happen. So even the people knew how terrible it was. And many of the women were raped by their soldier captors during their journey to Marietta, Georgia. after which they and their children were all imprisoned, starved, mistreated, and then sent into the north without a penny, without anything except the clothes on their back. Not one of those poor 400 unfortunate women ever returned home after the war. Now, that is an act at least, if not more, savage than Wounded Knee. What say you, Stephen Douglas Whitener?
Yeah, it's horrifying, the actual history of this empire. And I do believe that it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, I was just looking at what's going on now in Gaza and stuff. And, you know, they had cut the internet there. And apparently Elon Musk was willing to use his Starlink only for recognized relief organizations. In response, Israel's Minister of Communications says the country will immediately sever all ties with Starlink, and then went further. We will use available means to prevent Elon Musk from providing relief organizations in Gaza with the internet. It's like David Icke called the whole thing a big satanic sacrifice that they're doing there now. And it looks more and more like that they just another Dresden is what they want to turn Gaza into, it looks like. I'm sorry to go into a different subject, but that caught my eye, that even that it looks like this thing is on now and that they're doing it. And I don't know if anybody will stand up to them or not. Nobody has stood up to this empire yet, it seems like. And I don't know. It just disgusts me. Mr. Gaddy, I'm sorry.
All right, buddy. That's all right. Well, I've also looked at a distinguished military historian by the name of B.H. Liddell, L-I-D-D-E-L-L, and he observed that the code of civilized warfare, which had ruled Europe for over 200 years, was first destroyed by Abraham Lincoln's policy of directing the destruction of civil life in the South. On this matter, Liddell wrote, and I quote, "This policy was in many ways the prototype of modern total war," unquote. Is that not exactly, we haven't stopped. We still are doing this where we just kill people at random, innocent people, children, others. We don't care, because it's accomplishing a purpose that this government wants to do. And the thing that bothers me in a lot of ways is Lincoln was not ignorant of his army's atrocities. In his memoirs, William Tecumseh Sherman wrote that at a meeting with Lincoln after his march to the sea, the president was most eager to hear the stories of how thousands of Southern civilians, mostly women, children, old men, and slaves, were plundered, tortured, raped, murdered, and rendered absolutely homeless. Now, according to Sherman, his own notes, the president laughed almost uncontrollably at his narratives. Sherman biographer Lee Kennett concluded that had the Confederates won the war, they would have been justified in stringing up President Lincoln and the entire Union High Command for violations of the laws of war, specifically for waging war against non-combatant civilians. But yet, Lincoln's a hero, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. Man, none of these people are heroes. They just, the weak few that won't control the strong many. And you know, they have no gentleness. You have to have strength to be gentle. These people who are so wicked and mean are displaying their weakness. It's what they're doing. That's what it strikes me as. They think that this is some kind of power play, but it just shows how really weak that their position is. If you can't win the battlefield of ideas, it doesn't matter if you can win the battlefield of war, because the ideas are bulletproof and they will come back again.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I think we have to do a deep dive in there to find out where it originally comes from. But let's look at the fact that it had always been, from day one, Lincoln's strategy not only to defeat the South, but to destroy the Southern culture and the will of the Southern people by targeting not the military, but the civilians. under the concept of what Lincoln referred to as military necessity, his new code of war allowed him to do whatever was required to achieve that end, and his commanders followed suit. Even General Halleck, author of General Order No. 12, abandoned his concern for Southern civilization. Ulysses Grant decided after the Battle of Shiloh in April of 1862 that the only strategy possible was to annihilate the South completely. Writing to Sheridan and Sherman, here's what Ulysses S. Grant stated, and I quote, "We are not only fighting hostile armies, but a hostile people, and we must make old and young, rich and poor, feel the hard hand of war." Now, Stephen, let's contrast that with old Marsh Robert. Robert E. Lee's General Order No. 73, which was issued during his campaign into Pennsylvania in June and July of 1863. And here was his commanding order. And I quote, "The commanding general considers that no greater disgrace could befall the army, and through it our whole people, than the perpetration of the barbarous outrages upon unarmed and defenseless and the wanton destruction of private property that have marked the course of our enemy in our own country. Such proceedings not only degrade the perpetrators and all connected with them, but are subversive of the discipline and efficiency of our army and destructive of the ends of our present movement." He continues, "It must be remembered that we make war only upon armed men, and that we cannot take vengeance for the wrongs our people have suffered without lowering ourselves in the eyes of all whose abhorrence has been excited by the atrocities of our enemies, and offending against him to whom alone vengeance belongs, without whose favor and support our efforts must all prove in vain. The commanding general therefore earnestly exhorts the troops to abstain with most scrupulous care from any unnecessary or wanton injury to any private property, and he enjoins upon all officers to arrest and bring to summary punishment all who shall in any way offend against the orders on this subject." Unquote. Now, I think a point must be made here, Stephen. Lee is acting according to the God of Scripture, to whom he referred to as him to whom vengeance belongeth. Grant and the federal commanders, along with Lincoln, of course, were obeying the will of their God, government. As the war developed, this religious dichotomy rebounded badly in the Confederacy. In England, Confederate agent and procurer of warships James Bullock had built such ships as could bombard northern cities from the sea, but their use was rejected by the Confederate government because it would have caused harm to the civilians, and any such movement would be uncivilized and barbaric. The simple fact is this, Stephen. While the North sought to occupy the land and obliterate the culture and will of the people of the South, whose military commanders were steeped in military tradition based on Christianity, humanitarianism, and Western civilization, did not seek to foist its cultural and social values on the North. Neither did they wish to rule the North. They sought only to leave that government. When all was lost and General E. Porter Alexander recommended that the Confederate armies take to the hills and wage guerrilla warfare against their wicked conquerors, Lee opposed the idea. Author J. Winnick, in his book titled April 1865, wrote the following about Robert E. Lee. "Lee was principled to the bitter end, thinking nothing about personal glory, but what is honorable, what is proper, what is right. He quickly reasoned that a guerrilla war would make a wasteland of all that he loved. And even if it worked, and perhaps especially if it worked, that was too high a price to pay for Robert E. Lee. No matter how much he loved the cause, there were limits to Southern independence in Robert E. Lee's mind. However, there were no limits recognized by Lincoln and his military as to what could and should be committed and sacrificed to the mythical concept of a perpetual sacred union. Your thoughts, Stephen?
Well, my dad used to say something that went kind of like, there are only two things in this world you own, and that's your word and your honor. And the South was a completely different land. You know, a man's honor meant more here at the time. Just trying to think back the way that things were back then. In South Carolina, for instance, even though dueling was illegal, our governor had written a manual on how it should be done appropriately. You know, just a man's word, it was a completely different time. There'd be a whole lot less offended people around today if things were like that. And those ideas and those ideals, I think, will stand the test of time and will come back again. They may have burned this land once, but we're still here. The South, you know, as you said, it's the only area of the country that still purports the ideals that supposedly America was founded on.
Well, I found, and very well said, Stephen, but I find this quote by Sherman in a letter to Henry Halleck in 1863 as very, very relevant, and it's short. And then I would like your comment. Quote, "If we can, our numerical majority has both the natural and the constitutional right to govern everyone. If we cannot whip them, they contend for the natural right to select their own government," unquote. Your thoughts on that, Stephen, before we hit the bottom of the hour break?
Wow, we're going to enforce this contract on you, no matter whether you want it or not. It's like, hey, we've been trying to get in touch with you about your extended car warranty, and you got to sign on this one. It's ridiculous that they are going to force their constitution on us. They're going to force their government on us. They don't want, and at that point, that's a time to go to war. Then you really are fighting for your country. You cannot fight for your country in somebody else's country. I'm sorry. That doesn't work. People say he was over there fighting for his country. No, he was fighting for the government. If you want to fight for your country, you got to do it right where you stand and be attacked. Then it's legitimate. That's the only time I believe there is a legitimate reason for war. I think Smedley Butler said there were a couple of instances where it was actually justified, but not in another person's country.
Well, Stephen, I think very great comments there, but I think especially one of the things that Sherman said right there, I think most people don't realize, is that what Sherman said about the federal government, but they had a right, the federal government has a right to force Southerners or anyone else to accept their government. And if they won't accept it, we'll just kill you.
Oh, that sounds necessary and proper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, Stephen, the right to select one's government is exactly what the Declaration of Independence states.
And the Constitution was the counter-revolution to the Declaration of Independence, was it not, sir?
Absolutely. And here, what we have here that people cannot understand is the Union Army under Abraham Lincoln was a complete and total refutation of the Declaration of Independence.
They thought they had snuffed that flame of freedom out forever, but I hope they're wrong.
Yeah, me too. We'll be back on the other side, folks.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Welcome back, folks, to the Rebel Madman Radio Show here on RBN. And, folks, I challenge you to watch that video of Lee Von Helm and the night they drove Old Dixie down. And he was a wonderful Confederate. May he rest in peace. But here's the thing I would ask you. Find in any place, wherever you want to look, find me a place where a man sang with more passion than Lee Von Helm did in the night they drove Old Dixie down. But here is something I just wanted to jump in here with, Stephen, and then get to your own comments here. But during his masterpiece of terrible atrocities against human life, and his infamous march to the sea, Sherman wrote to Halleck a masterpiece of total war, in which he said, is what I had read to you before. If we have the numerical majority, let's whip them and take over their country. If we can't whip them, then they should have the right to elect their own government. So people, it's not about freedom of choice. It's about force. In effect, Sherman spoke of might giving the Union the right to force Southerners to accept a government, or more precisely, a God that they had rejected. But the right to select one's government was exactly what the Declaration of Independence, as we mentioned before, and all that followed was about, we are told. However, to ensure that the South would be prevented from exercising this right of free men, for which both the North and South fought in the Revolutionary War, Sherman would, in his own words, remove and destroy every obstacle, take every life, every acre of land, every particle of property, everything that to us seems proper. Now, that comes from the Official Records, Series 1, Volume 30, Part 3, in case you would like to check behind me. The Lincoln myth of a gentle and compassionate man who, in his own words, said he had no desire to take bloody vengeance on the South, or to kill or to subjugate them, or to confiscate their property, or to deprive them of their legal and constitutional rights, is an outstanding, blatant lie. And I offer the proof that after issuing the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed no black anywhere, Lincoln made the following statement about his proclamation, which the Emancipation Proclamation, which he called a war measure. And Lincoln said, and I quote, "The character of this war will be forthwith changed. It will be one of subjugation. The South is to be destroyed and replaced by entirely new propositions and new ideas," unquote. Lincoln's policies eradicated not only the South, but any concept of a voluntary union as we were taught this country was founded upon. And, you know, and another thing, and I'm going to do it on another program, Stephen, because we just don't have time to do it here. But what I wanted to get into was on a future program is the atrocities that were committed against Confederate soldiers in the POW camps.
Yeah, they and, talk about Andersonville, but they, yes. know, we were basically what the Germans were at the end of World War II down here, starving and blockaded. There was no, you know, it was nothing to give them.
Well, there was actually a Union officer who was held at and survived Andersonville, and he wrote a book after the war, and he stated unequivocally that it was not the South's fault that the people were dying at Andersonville, because he said in his book, and I've got the book, he said in his book that the prisoners and the guards were eating the same mess and no one had any medicines for any type of disease or anything else because they had all been blockaded by the Union Army. And if we look at the surgeon from Elmira, New York, which the Confederates called Hellmira, he made a blatant statement at the end of the war, and he said, "I truly believe that I may have killed more Confederate enemy than any general on the battlefield." So what would that tell you, Stephen?
Yeah, it's. I think they want to do that again to this country, sir. I think they want us subjugated as much as possible. You said this is a war of subjugation. It's a government of subjugation, a government of force, not cooperation. It just, and it's been that way from the beginning. It just, I didn't realize how how stark the contrast was between the Declaration and the Constitution and how it's gone downhill from then. You know, just there's no saving this, people. There is no reforming this government. You're not going to vote anybody in that's going to fix it. You can't fix it with more of the same. You know, you can't fix a problem with more of the problem. You can't cure a dose of poison with more poison. You need an antidote.
And we certainly don't have that, do we?
No, sir.
See, here's the thing that I am trying to get across to people, and I know it's a slow process. But this government that we have now is the same government that raped, pillaged, and burned its way across the South. This is the same government that killed, starved, and by exposure, killed probably millions after World War II. This is the same government that supported sending Russians back to Russia in Operation Keel Haul, knowing full well that the first boatload of these people who landed in Russia were summarily executed, shot to death as they got off of the boat. And yet we condone that. This government is pure T evil, people. It is satanic, and it is evil to the very depths of its being. And when you support it with your vote, you are condoning it. I've had people tell me, well, just the government does stuff. I didn't tell them they could do it. I said, did you vote? Yes, I did. I voted. I vote every election. I said, well, then you told the government they can do what they want to. Well, no, I didn't. Yes, you did.
Yeah, I agree. Some people would say that, oh, if you didn't vote, you don't have a right to complain. I say the opposite is true. If you voted for this stuff, then don't complain. If you voted at all.
Well, let's not forget for a moment that at Camp Douglas, a Union prisoner of war camp, let's not forget for a moment that if a black Confederate soldier was captured and was brought to Camp Douglas, by the official records of the United States government in the War of the Rebellion, any black brought to Camp Douglas, any Confederate black brought there, was summarily executed. They didn't feed them. They didn't give them clothes. They didn't do anything. They just killed them.
And they didn't teach you that down at the high school. I didn't even know that. I've heard of Camp Douglas before and how it was such a horrible place, but I did not know that they would execute a Confederate black. Do you know how many times that happened?
No, I don't. But the records are, it doesn't give numbers, but it just says it actually happened. You know, they don't pull back and say, no, it didn't happen. It's actually there in the War of the Rebellion that was done. And, you know, we know that also from the records that at Camp Douglas, the people of Chicago had which is near Camp Douglas, had compassion for these Confederates who were prisoners of war. And they brought food and they brought clothing and they brought blankets. Those Chicago winters can be pretty nasty. They brought all of these to the camp commander to give to the Confederate prisoners. These were humane people. And all of it was turned away by the commander.
Yeah.
He wouldn't allow them to have blankets for winter, wouldn't allow them to have extra clothes, wouldn't allow them to have extra food.
I don't understand why they had this enmity in them. I don't know what the beef they had with these people was. What did they do to them? I don't know.
Well, if we got somebody scheduled out there, let's give them a shot. Yes, sir.
Yeah. There's three. We got three, sir.
Oh, okay. I better get on that sheet so I can see it, hadn't I?
Yes, sir.
Instead of looking at my notes. Yep, I better do that. Let's see. Oh, I can't get there. Something's happening.
I've got them. The ones here. Earl in Texas is first, sir.
All right. Yeah, I got it now. Okay, Earl, how you doing, buddy?
Thank you for taking my call, and we're doing good. I'd like to comment on your program yesterday. I thought it was an excellent program, and I agree 100% what you were talking about. And give you a real brief illustration. Many years ago, a few of us were going to have a reading of the Declaration of Independence up in Cleburne, Texas. And what we did, we advertised it, got it all ready for the Independence Day, July 4th. One elderly woman of 80 years was the only one to come down by that courthouse. And the old gal, she cried. She could not believe that people wouldn't take the time to hear something. And also, a number of years ago, to show that this queer movement has been ongoing for a long time, my wife, a friend of mine, and myself, we put out a notice to meet at City Hall. Three people, the ones I just mentioned. We notified about 70 churches. Not one of them showed up. Now, in reference to what you were talking about yesterday, sir, about the church, I had contended for many years that the church has been dead. It has no backbone like it did to inspire the people, inspire their minds into revolt. Because that's where the revolution starts, in the mind, knowing who you are and what you need to stand for. And on that note, I'll let you get on with it, but I do appreciate your program. Thank you.
Earl, thank you, sir. We certainly appreciate that comment. You are spot on, and your support is very much appreciated. And now we've got another gentleman from Texas, Ken. Ken, how are you, sir?
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you, RBN, for having these shows. It's really a godsend. Speaking of that line of thought, you nailed it last night, Mr. Gaddy, I believe, when you said, if I can paraphrase, basically it's a God thing now, and I really believe that that's exactly what's been going on the entire time, because I really think, and I'm painting with a broad brush, you know, only have a little bit of time here, but I think that it's a something that's being caused so that God's people will come back to him and will ignite the fires of faith and hope, and then, you know, love for each other as well. And having said that, and I appreciate you saying that last night, because it is the critical, you know, axiomatic issue, the crux of the matter, if I could say that. All the politics generally seems to follow the religion, and so I'm kind of curious if you have a perspective on the northern, you know, religious bent versus the southern religious bent, and if it really, you know, was. I apologize if you've already talked about that. And
No. You just made me laugh, Ken. You made me laugh because I remember something my grandfather used to say over and over again. And you, thanks for bringing back that memory, because anybody who brings back a memory of my grandfather is special in my world. But I'll never forget my grandfather asking one time, he said, what's the difference between a Northern Baptist and a Southern Baptist? And I said, Pa, I don't have a clue. And he said, well, the Northern Baptist says there ain't no hell, and the Southern Baptist says the hell they ain't. So, if we melt it all down, that's one of the things I give my grandfather the credit for. My grandfather could melt down a huge issue into a couple of sentences better than anybody I've ever met. And he said that, I'll never forget the day he said that. There were several of us standing around, and that was, we were talking about something that the Northern Baptists had done about, you know, with the Southern Baptist Association, or something had come up. Now, this is 40 plus years ago when he said that. So, yeah, Ken, thank you so much for making me think of that again. I appreciate you, sir.
Well, certainly. Didn't realize what I was doing.
Well, thank you for doing it. Stephen, you have any comments, sir?
Yeah, I appreciated your show last night a lot as well. Mike Gaddy was on fire last night, y'all. If you didn't hear the National Intel Report Friday night, listeners, RBN, you did check out that archive. And I also want to let everyone know at RBN that they can go to smallcasemichaelgaddy.substack.com and support this man and his work and get a lot more of this information there.
Well, thank you, Stephen. And Stephen, I must tell you, and I was just commenting to Scorpio earlier today, that of all of the radio programs I've done at RBN, I got more comments on last night's show than I've gotten on any show I've ever done.
Well, you nailed it.
Amen.
I mean, you really, that's the crux of the matter. And, well, anyhow, if I could be so bold as to throw out my six-second soundbite of my interpretation is, I really think that old Abe was Jesuit-orientated, and I just really wonder if the Northern aggression wasn't more of an anti-Protestant movement, with the Southern states being, you know, predominantly Protestant and I don't want to say anti-Catholic, but that's what it kind of boils down to, because I don't want to lump, you know, a whole group of people into a bad light. But your thoughts on that?
Well, Ken, I think you're exactly right, sir. And I think the reason being is that when the Marxists began to infiltrate the North, they didn't come south. They went into the northern cities because they wanted that big city type thing. And so as they migrated, you know, hundreds of thousands of them migrated from Europe after the revolt was put down in 1848, and many of them came to America. Two things they moved to take over as quickly as possible, and number one was newspapers. They wanted to own all the newspapers, and they bought up a bunch of them. And the second thing they wanted to control was the churches. And by incrementalism, they took over the Northern Church, turned the Northern churches into what we call transcendentalism and into Unitarianism against the Christianity of the Church of the South. So, Ken, you're spot on, sir.
Yeah, some of these things are hard to talk about because, you know, you don't want to alienate people and, you know, lumping them all into the same group. But at the same time, you know, that's who they were a part of, you know, and it's up to those groups to eradicate themselves of the false believers. So in a way, you kind of have to do it. And on another hand, you don't want to do it. But, well, you know, D.C. was a Jesuit swamp.
Yep, so. Very much so. And, Ken, I hope you won't mind, buddy. I've got a couple of other guys I need to try
Certainly.
To get in before the top of the hour. But, Ken, thank you so much. I really appreciate your calling in. Really appreciate your comments. And thank you
Catch
so
you
much
next
for
time.
That.
All right,
yes, sir. Thank you, buddy. Now to James in Vancouver. James, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was just checking. Stoneman... General Stoneman in the Union Army was classmates with Stonewall Jackson at West Point. And Stoneman got his ass whipped at Chancellorsville. And they caught him, and they took him prisoner, you see. And, everybody knows, at least I had professors from the United States tell me, or I asked them, I said, were the generals better on the southern side? He said, yeah. And I think these Union generals were angry because they knew they were outclassed. What do you think?
Oh, big time, especially in the Shenandoah Valley in 1862. Stonewall Jackson took about 30,000 soldiers and went up against Shields, Banks, and Fremont, who collectively had over 100,000, and he kicked their ass up and down the Shenandoah Valley for a year.
Yeah, and again, it's too bad that he didn't get to do what he wanted to do, and that is take Baltimore and D.C. right at the beginning of the war. And
he couldn't.
I'll let you. Yeah, go ahead.
He couldn't. couldn't convince them, James. He couldn't convince the the Confederate government to do that. And I put that blame directly on Jefferson Davis and Judah P. Benjamin. But James, thank you so much, buddy. Let me try to get in one more caller, sir. Thank you, James. Have a great one.
You're welcome.
Bye. How about Joe in Oklahoma? Joe, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. Just a quick note here. I was watching Real America's Voice yesterday evening, and on the banner below, it said that the statue of Robert E. Lee had been recovered and is being taken to be recast. It didn't say recast as Robert E. Lee and Traveler, but it's to be recast, and I assume it's to be recast in its original form.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so, Joe.
Well, they have hundreds more to do besides him.
Oh, that's for sure. Steve, any comment on that? Oh, no, go ahead, Joe.
I hope it's true.
Oh, me too. But I don't trust these people as far as I could spit a brick.
Well, you won't see it on any other major media.
Oh, that's for sure. No, all we can get there is the lies that are approved by the government on the other media shows.
So you might keep your eye out for it.
Yeah, I don't know all the details of that, but I did see something about a statue that was going to be recast, but I don't think it was going to be recast as Robert E. Lee. I think they may be recasting it into something else was the impression I got, but I honestly have not dug into the story enough. It just that headline passed me by as well, sir. I don't know all the details.
Me either, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they do something totally nefarious with that, mm-hmm. because these psychotic bastards would like to do anything they possibly could to defame the idealism of the people of the South.
I concur, and keep up the good work. God bless y'all.
Thank you, Joe. God bless you, and have a great weekend, sir, what's left of it. And we are rapidly running out of time here, folks. Stephen, would you like to close us out with your thoughts, sir?
Hey, if anybody's near Travis Rest, South Carolina, I'm going to be here for another hour or so. And there's some mead and music and good people here. The Dixie Republic, Travis Rest, South Carolina. And really, thanks for having me, Mike, and coming on with me early this morning. It's an honor to be on RBN with you, sir.
Oh, I concur totally. I'm always happy to have you on with my programs or to be on yours. It's always a great pleasure indeed, and I certainly enjoy it. So, folks, check out michaelgatti.substack.com. Read my stuff, which contains a lot of original source documents. Tune in to Stephen's show. Stephen, tell him very quickly about your show.
8 to 10 Central Time, 9 to 11 Eastern Time, Saturday mornings, we commit thought crimes right here on RBN at Thought Crime Live. I'm the resident thought criminal, and I'll give a plug to our buddy Blackbird 9 coming on an hour from now, the Snack Shack at 7 p.m. He couldn't make it down here today to the Dixie Republic, but he has been here before, too. You might run into Blackbird 9 around here sometime if y'all are able to make it.
Oh, yeah, and starting on my Saturday shows in a couple of weeks, I know the music's coming on, but Blackbird 9 and I are going to do a program together once a month called the Black Ball Spooks.
That'll be terrific, sir.
All right, folks, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for tuning in to RBN, and let's support RBN, folks. Have a wonderful day. God bless.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They they can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.